Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of Added Volume Podcast, the official podcast from Added Value. Added Value is a recruitment agency originally from Israel, operating already for almost 15 years, recruiting and sourcing for very hard to fill positions in Israel and all over the world. We are working approximately with 60 startups, tech startups a year, and hiring between 300 and 400 professionals a year. And this episode, we have a very, very special guest. It's a good friend and also an old colleague, Julien Etrangel. Welcome, Julien. I hope I said your name correctly.
Yes, you did. You did, Julien Etrangel. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yes. Welcome. I will just say Julien because the family name is a bit hard for me. And today we're going to talk about establishing a recruitment agency. So Julien established his own agency about 2 years ago. He will tell us all about it. The company is fully remote operated. So we're going to hear a lot about that. And before we start, Julien, I'm going to just share the topics we're going to go through so our listeners know what to expect. So Julien is going to introduce himself, of course, where he's coming from, his career, his experience, so on. We're going to talk a little bit about burnout in recruitment. Then we're going to talk about actually launching Julien's company, Fledge. We're going to talk why to open or launch an agency and how to do it. We're going to talk later on about the current market situation, especially in tech, and how it's affecting also smart companies like small companies like Fledge. As we said, the company is fully remotely, so maybe we're going to dip a bit and talk about digital nomading and something sweet for the end. Maybe Julien will share with us some tips for the future entrepreneurs. So Julien, be my guest again. Thank you for joining. And we'd love to hear a bit about you, where you're coming from, also a bit about your personal hobbies maybe and what you like to do, but also of course about your career and history.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So as you probably guessed from the accent, I'm French.
It's hard to hide.
I can't hide this one. I've tried, but I gave up. So yes, I am French. I was born in November 86. So I'm going to turn 37 this year. Back in France, in Montélimar, the southeast, let's say it's about 2 hours north of Marseille. My parents, my mom was a secretary at the city hall. My dad was an electrician. He worked for the national electric company, EDF. And I grew up very, very happily in this in a middle class French family. I had the chance to go through the public school. I wasn't great at school, let's face it, but having with a bit of work, I made it to university, where I study sociology and economics. And I'm mentioning this because it's also where or when my passion for people and how they interact in society and how they can together build something really started. And sociology and economics at university was for me a mind-blowing and really became a passion. Uh-huh. I stopped university relatively early, and actually I left and started to work in a in a cinema in Lyon.
So you didn't graduate the university?
I haven't graduated, actually. That's something I tend to hide as well, because I'm but no, I don't have I don't have any post high school diplomas.
I think it's nothing really to hide. I think many, many successful people actually don't have a formal education, especially in the new world. So,
well, yeah, perhaps, and who knows? Maybe I'll get back to university at a later stage. I see myself more as an elderly man in my 70s, 80s, and studying topics that when I would have the time, actually. Plenty of very interesting thing to learn about. So, but yes, at that time, due to some mostly financial reasons, and also I didn't see myself like really pushing towards university studies. I was always a doer, let's say, someone who likes to do things myself and make money and then I don't know, travel. So I worked in a cinema. And some cultural events, and absolutely loved it. Frankly speaking, there was one of the most, enthusiastic and happy moment of my life. I was working the machinery behind at that time. Not everything was like digitalized. So you had like actual machines. It was super cool. The sound of those machines, the smell of it, I still remember. It was really, really nice. And I had access to a number of different movies. Anyways. Very good.
It reminds me of the movie of Tarantino, the Inglorious Bastards, no? Is the
yes,
the old cinema.
Yeah. There is a bit of this. On top of that, next to it, I was selling tickets, of course, at the entry, but I was also like selling popcorns and other like drinks. And I really like that that atmosphere. It's also one of the rare places where it's not it breaks social barriers. So you would have like a lower class, upper class, like everyone is going to the cinema, everyone is going to watch a movie. I mean, less with the streaming platform lately, but like it's still it's very I don't know, I like this place. Anyways, next to that, I was traveling, spending some time as much as I could, and I could afford it. Went to different places in Europe. And at some point, I moved to Berlin, actually. I had the occasion because a German friend of mine that I met in Lyon proposed me to live with him in his flat. Anyways, super nice. It was in 2011. I'm mentioning this because that's also where I actually, it's not mentioned on my LinkedIn, but I worked for a company called Lieferando. You probably don't know it because it's very German, but it's the mother company of Delivery Hero and other delivery apps. And so then it merged into like a huge group. And it was my very first experience actually back in 2011, 2012, if I remember correctly, into the startup scene. It's like very, very, again, like interesting.
But was your first recruitment in a way?
No. I was doing pure customer service. So I was taking on calls from clients. I was doing a bit of translations. You know, these kind of like roles where you do a bit of everything, like support operations functions. I did this a little bit, and I liked it. I liked the dynamic. I liked the, but I didn't push further. I was still in my hippie sort of like traveling modes, and decided to join a German guy that I've met in Berlin, who was a photographer. He was going to Albania to actually do like a photo reportage, which I joined indeed. And I'm saying this because I did my trip from Berlin to Albania, so from North Europe to South Europe, backpacking. And I stopped in Budapest in 2012, and there I completely fell in love with the city. And this is where I moved back in 2013. So a year later, after some other adventures, and I thought I would go back to Budapest. Yeah. and I worked in a hostel for some time. I was making at that time, you who lived in Hungary as well, I was making at the time 900 forints an hour. I still remember. Uh-huh. 900 forints an hour for people living with euros. It's probably about like 2.50 euros, maybe 3 euros max.
Back then it was okay, no?
Yeah, it probably was twice the amount nowadays. So it was but still, I mean, you would not like, I don't know, well, yeah. It was nice. I got the chance to get a job at Randstad Sourceright, frankly speaking, mostly because I was French myself. I didn't need like French native speakers. So I did get a chance to integrate this agency as a very junior like sourcer with zero experience. And I joined Balázs Parocai, that everyone knows. And there was also, I don't know, a lot of good guys. I'm thinking about Clara as well. Clara, who's now part of the learning and development team in Facebook, Seattle. I'm thinking about Thomas, who's now leading the Nissan RPO here in Budapest. I'm also thinking about like Sébastien, who is managing the operation excellence at Randstad in Switzerland. So you really had like a strong, motivated bunch of guys and girls, and including you. This is where I met you.
We have to mention it. This is our first time we met.
Absolutely. So, and this is where I really started like recruitment as such, pure headhunting, so technical sourcing. I mean, frankly speaking, we were paid to like look on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and other job boards all day. It was amazing. It was absolutely cool. Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, maybe I also can add that this was a really special time. Also for me, this was also my first job in this industry, in recruitment and sourcing. And it was this time when Randstad Sourceright was just emerging with the center in Budapest, and everything felt like kind of a startup feeling. Everything was just happening, and the people were very motivated and excited. And the technology and the things that we were taught and we were starting to do was like brand new and like cutting edge. Yeah, like nobody knew what we are doing. Like when I remember when I started this job and I was sharing with other people what I was doing, people were like, yeah, like I fell down from the moon. Like, what are you talking about? So it was really, really exciting times.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It was like, absolutely, like very enjoyable. And the people were amazing. What an excellent atmosphere. I remember us going out once, twice a week, but also just like work-wise. You could just like really pop up at anyone's desk and ask questions. There was this passion, this enthusiasm for the topic. And we all really, I think we all had the feeling, and we really did own this like feeling of being part of something unique. And I honestly believe it was one of the best sourcing team in Europe at that time. Maybe Microsoft in Ireland. And of course, other like, bigger brands, but among like sourcing, pure sourcing centers, fairly advanced.
Yes, indeed.
Nice. What to say? Yeah, no. So, like, I then had was after like 3-4 years, I guess, in Budapest, working at Randstad. Had the opportunity also to be a team leader. We were launching like the French market, other like French speaking market in Europe, and other markets as well. It went all well. And so I got to know a little bit about team leading and client management and setting up KPIs, et cetera, which I loved, but I had also the feeling that it was not just yet what I wanted to do. And instead, I wanted to like get back into pure hands-on recruitment and see also very much the impact my recruitees, like my candidates, have in their team. So I tried my best to move in a house. I got for a couple of months, I think I worked in as a 360 data recruiter for a consulting company in Spain. So I moved to Spain indeed at that time. And it wasn't my thing to do this like agency 360 recruitment. I did not really like it. Uh-huh. And I had the chance, thanks to eCare, Josue, that again, a very famous, notorious sourcer, who advised me and gave my name to a startup in Barcelona. And he said, hey, look, there is this data recruiter specialized in sourcing. He could help you to speed up your recruitment operations. They like my CV. They like speaking with me. And it was amazing, actually. It was like my first ever experience in an American startup. So you can imagine like, those very nice offices with people playing like football, or like coming with like electric scooters, running in the office. Like it was just like very, very tech, very, whatever you can imagine from an American startup in Barcelona. With a nice large rooftop, looking at Portobello, absolutely, yeah.
Sounds exciting times. Yeah,
it was one of the best decision I had, and for that I definitely thanks Iker. Definitely.
You know Iker personally?
Yeah. Definitely. Uh-huh. We stay in touch quite regularly, and so he has his own life, and we are not like close friends, but we are definitely in good contact. I was on the phone with him just like a few weeks back, actually. He was asking me for some market updates, and we always like exchange good information.
And what was the start of this Barcelona startup, American startup?
It was called Letgo. Letgo was a secondhand classified marketplace, and very much very close to what Vinted is doing. It's Baltic company. With the exception that Letgo was operating mostly in the US, actually, from Spain. So the tech hub was in Barcelona because their CTO and one of their investors was Catalan and wanted to have an office in Barcelona. But the business itself was very much American-based. And so my first mission, I joined the company where Patricia, actually, I want to name her because she's been very nice, as well as Paola, hired me together with Dermot. Dermot is still a close friend of mine and now works, has worked in all the big tech you can imagine, Vimeo, Skyscanner, Apple, and so on. He's a reference in the tech recruitment for me. And so we really built what I think was the best in-house recruitment team in Spain, and for sure in Barcelona, maybe in Spain as well. We had all the tools necessary at the time. We could implement best sourcing practices, and we worked on employer brandings, and we worked on all possible processes. And we put together the live data analysis, and that was something also quite cool. We worked with the business intelligence team, and so they could extract all data from Greenhouse, put it in Tableau, and so all hiring managers have a real-time visualization of their pipeline and the advancement of each candidate, and the management could also extract reporting and have like a broader vision of their recruitment operations.
This is pretty advanced for that time.
Yeah, that was really advanced and really enjoyable, because a big part of the recruitment success comes with communication, I think, and trust with hiring managers, and all of that is data, actually. So you gotta put together your data. Game and upgrade your data game if you want to succeed in house, I believe so.
And at that point, you were a talent acquisition partner, so you did 360 everything at Letgo.
Yeah, so I would not call it 360 because it's in-house. But yes, I was doing a lot of the sourcing and a lot of the recruiting, definitely, and stakeholder management for the data team, mostly data and tech in general. I then had the chance to be promoted team leader. Again, excellent experience to look after the recruitment in New York, actually, because we had an office in New York with Lisa, the recruiter there. And we had an office in Istanbul, also in Turkey, because for some reasons that the market in Istanbul was great for us. And of course, we had the tech hub in Barcelona. So international in-house recruitment was very, on a management level, is very, very interesting. Also, being in touch with leadership, investors, and C-level was, yeah, absolutely. Again, for someone of my background, and an excellent chance, actually, absolutely.
Wow, it sounds really amazing, and it seems like you're a natural leader. So everywhere you go, you've been after some very short time promoted to be a team lead. So it's something that you recognize in yourself, like. That you're a natural leader, you have the passion for taking people and helping them and training them and moving everything forward?
Perhaps, if you say so. I would, but I'm happy you mentioned leader and not manager, because I actually think I'm a terrible manager. I'm not someone who's gonna, I don't know, look after everyone's daily schedule. I'm not an aggressive type of personality, and I don't know. So this old school management style is just not me, and I don't want to do this. So sometimes I was asked, and especially in agency, actually in Randstad, you could tell that the management was more pushy, and that's not exactly the way I could lead a team. But in house, I guess, I like to initiate the drive, I would say, and I'm relatively proactive. And I also like to have a big picture and apply a big picture and segment it into daily operations and weekly operations, and see the growth, see the scale, build the scale. So that's probably where my strength is.
You know, I think, like, from my experience, because I'm also leading team in the last 2 years, and how I feel the thing, what you were mentioning about old school management and the difference between this and leadership. I really believe that in the world we live now, if you manage to hire the right people who really have passion for what they do and they're mature enough and skilled enough and experienced enough, you don't need to really do this daily management and micromanagement things, because then probably you hire the wrong people. I think in this point comes in the leader thing that you really, what you just mentioned, you bring the drive, you bring the ideas, you show, you teach, and then the people just take it. And if they're independent, they will just do what it takes.
I fully agree. And I also believe that what most people are looking for nowadays is actually a mission they can fight for, and freedom and support.
So exactly. Mm-hmm.
As a leader, you need to be here when they need you. You need to support them. You need to make sure you are coming with extra knowledge, and you need to bring the vision as well on what you guys are building. But you need to give them the freedom so they can execute on their own terms, actually, and be be responsible for what they do. Absolutely.
Okay. So let go.
Yes.
What happened next?
Then I let go. It wasn't meant to succeed. Let's say the competition on the American market was very difficult. Facebook Marketplace came up with a tool. Facebook came up with Marketplace. And of course, when Facebook is entering a market, Facebook take over the market. They just have an army of engineers to do so. So we merged with OfferUp. And left the American market, and the other side of the business was sold to OLX, a Dutch marketplace, and essentially let go disappeared. So in the meantime, I accepted a job at at Sender, an American skating company in Berlin based. And so after Hungary and Spain, I moved to Germany. I moved to Berlin. Very interesting challenge for me to go to an even bigger city and a bigger market. But very little I knew all the work I would have to do to scale the recruitment operations at that stage. So a bit of context. At that time, they just raised the series A or B. I'm not sure. It was roughly 30 million. But that was like directly some sort of spotlight about Sender. So the time for me to actually move and to join and to be effective in Berlin. So let's say 2-3 months. They raised another series and of, if I'm correct again, like around 70 million. So within the space of less than 6 months, there is about 100 million. You can't imagine the pressure that brings that much money into your organization. And so when I arrived, I was left with two recruiters. One was their first job ever. Another one was his second job, probably. Both very motivated. So nothing to blame them for, but like just the situation itself was extremely difficult. And the expectations was huge. So we were capable to hire, let's say, less than 5 people a month. And we had to grow massively. And so we built within a couple of years a company from, I think I joined, we were about like 60, 80, when I left about like 600. So it's roughly 35 people a month hired from scratch. Insane scale,
yes. And the pressure that put on you in this kind of situation when you are the main recruiting function. And you join this company. What was the name of this Berlin startup?
Sender.
Sender. And you join as a team leader. You were leading the talent acquisition at the time?
Yeah. I joined as a head of talent acquisition.
And the talent acquisition. Okay.
Exactly. So I looked after all recruitment function. But frankly speaking, the whole people team was relatively inexperienced. And so there was no structure. There was no, people experience team. There was no people operation team. There was very, very, very little things. And it was just about like building up everything while scaling massively. It was very difficult because I guess there is also a lot of education to do. So not only you need to do the job, not only you need to bring like solutions, not only you need to bring you need to be effective, but you also need to educate everyone that's around you about like questions around recruitment. And I remember at that time one of the HR lady told me that she's certain that each recruiter could hire 10 engineers a month. And in this case, with 3 recruiters, we can bring 30 engineers per month. And I kind of like laugh. I remember because that doesn't make sense. Otherwise, most of our agency friends will be millionaire.
yes, but, exactly.
but inside I was crying. I was crying because I realized that indeed, like there's going to be an insane amount of work and also changing mentalities and educate everyone and train everyone into this roller coaster. So
it could be extremely frustrating, you know, that you already find yourself in the situation that you are the responsible for the thing and you have the management and I don't know, the investors and everybody pushing you from up, but you don't really have a strong team to really do the job. And you find yourself, like, as you say, crying. I can't say it better.
No, for sure. For sure. And I know we're going to come into this later, but or right after. But that's a little bit how and when I realized that there was a problem in those, like, hyperscale companies. That was, like, ridiculous. That was just, like, unhealthy. It was, like, frustrating for everyone. And I was working, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, sometimes like 7 days a week, and just like not even reaching just a little bit of the expectations. because it was just always more, always faster, always. So it's just, it's just very, very difficult and barely possible. Yeah.
And I know this is the nature of startups because we also work only with startups and tech startups. But do you feel that this is the nature of working at a startup? It has to be like that.
Well, frankly speaking, I don't think so anymore. At least I think it has changed. And so I think the model of the VC model of like crazy scale unicorns that happened between, I don't know, 2010 and 2020 and the rocket internet market from Berlin, let's say, and so on. I think this is completely over. I don't believe there is there is that much pressure anymore. Like companies like, I don't know, I don't want to names, but like, you have some in mind that grew massively within a very short period of time, but like in very destructive and toxic culture of environment. I think this is over. I don't see it happening anymore. Uh-huh. And instead, we are moving into something that is a little bit, I'm hoping, more sustainable way of talent acquisition management. And all recruitment efforts would have a way better way to proceed, if that makes sense.
It makes sense that the market is changing and there was a really crazy hype time, a lot of money going into the market and of course pushing the startup to scale fast and pushing talent acquisition teams. And now, of course, the market is lower, but you know, we never know. Might be in a year or two, I don't know when, if the market hits up again, everybody will forget and gonna go again, probably in this crazy race. So who knows?
Yeah, hopefully not.
Okay, so what happened next?
It's not the best moment of my life, but COVID happened, 2020, 21. And then I was alone in my Berlin living room in the middle of winter. Opening my laptop, working from home. And that was a day I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I smoking that much cigarette every day? What am I stressing out? What am I having, like, just damaging my mental health as much? And I think I collapsed, actually. I had a huge burnout. And I remember one day I was about to open my laptop and I just said, no, I did not open my laptop. And the physical hardware, the laptop itself, just to look at it, it gave me anxiety. I was like stressed and anxious and hurt just to look at this. I remember just like the notification of an email would hurt me physically. It would make me feel bad. Slack messages and all these things like would actually like completely block me. It's a feeling that I've never experienced before, and it's very, very, very difficult. And you feel quite weak. You feel solutionless, and you feel, at least I felt, a little bit like a loser. I felt a little bit like, hey, like you cannot do it. You cannot achieve what you are coming to do here. Like building up these operations and growing the team. I felt not good enough, not strong enough. But looking back, I don't think anybody would have been able to do that, honestly.
No, it sounds like heavy things you were going through. And as I know, many, many recruitment and talent acquisition professionals also experience this kind of, I would say, anxiety, depression, burnout feeling from this kind of work. And I think this is not the topic for this podcast, but I think maybe once we can, you know, meet up and record another episode about mental health in recruitment, because it's a very interesting topic.
No, I'd like definitely to share this, and also because it's something we don't talk a lot enough.
Exactly.
We don't talk enough about it. And I know a lot of recruiters have been hurt lately, some recruiters with the crisis. I haven't had jobs for like months. And when you're used to like, I don't know, deal with so many candidates and so many hiring managers, and you are so important and under the spotlight, and then out of an email, because you get fired out of just like no reasons, just for budget cuts, even though you were a performing employee. And some of my colleagues have been, or my peers have been out of job for like months. And you, this also can really hurt you mentally. And I can't even imagine the damages that it has on your loved ones and close ones as well. And that's something we don't mention enough. So happy to discuss that as well, for sure. 100%.
Yeah. Maybe another time, because our time is a bit limited.
Yeah.
So we are arriving to the point that you felt really bad, mm-hmm. let's say a burnout, if you use this term. And somewhere at that point came the idea to establish your own company, right?
Yeah. Essentially, I wanted to. I looked at what happened, and I realized that the most of the reasons why that leads to this toxic recruitment culture is a sense that the solutions were not right at the very beginning, and so you kind of like you're always behind. And you're always late, and you can't really catch up with the workload. So my idea was to come back at an early stage, and with all the experience that I gained the last 10 years, speak with founders at the Steel Series A, between Steel and Series A, and help them understand what's going to come, you know, and be proactive in their recruitment and talent acquisition strategy. To me, it's very simple. There are two ways to build company. The first way, you can consider that employee are replaceable, that you can just hire and fire, and you, as long as you have enough funding money and you can, and people doing the job, you can grow. That's one of the way to build the company. And there is a second way, where you can actually create a workplace where people have freedom, as we mentioned, where you give them the right tools, the right support, so they can perform and grow into their role. And mm-hmm. And I believe in the latter way, obviously, and that's what we are doing at Fledge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's connected. It's related to what we discussed earlier about also macro management.
Absolutely.
And the kind of people you're working with, and they are independent and they have the passion, and you create this work environment, and it's a totally different story.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of can admire you for the idea that you wanted to create a company, not only for the business model, but also for kind of a more human vision, how to work with people, how to manage people, how to get things done. Not only business wise. So
no, 100%. And back on this, it's our mission, and that's something that I'm really passionate about. And to give you some number, I have cut probably half of my salary moving from in-house to agencies, but I am at least twice happier. So so there is no comparison in my well-being and the way I do my daily life. Money is not everything, definitely not. We are a profitable business. We want to grow, and we want to, of course, increase our revenues at Fledge. Our primary mission is to make sure that we support talent acquisition, healthy talent acquisition operations. Definitely, 100%. And on that, I actually just received a message as we speak now. Because I'm going to be a mentor at an incubator in Lisbon. They are not paying me. It's all for free. And I'm going to invest an afternoon per week, spending time with founders, indeed at Steel and pre-seed stage, and helping them on their recruitment operations, just as a give back to the community and making sure that they don't do the mistake that I've seen elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So you take your personal story, and you make from it also, in a way, an example, and also kind of educational thing to help future entrepreneurs and professionals, which is amazing. It's a great cause. It's a great effort to do.
Thank you.
Yes. Really, I really feel that it's more than just making money. So tell us a bit about Fledge. What exactly are you doing? What services do you offer? How many people are Fledge at the moment? And also, what does it mean? What is Fledge actually?
It was difficult to find a name for the company. We wanted one word name, which is very difficult because Apple is already taken and Nike as well. So we tried to buy Apple, but they did not accept our offer. we looked at different possible names available and also like domain name that was affordable. We found Fledge after weeks and weeks of research. I want to thank Melina, by the way, here. She was the one, she was the branding and communication manager that I worked with in Berlin. And she's been doing a very great job at finding this name. Fledge is, by definition, is of a young bird that acquires the feathers necessary to fly or do any independent activity. So it's the moment where they can leave the nest after acquiring enough feathers. It works well for like early stage companies. We are trying to give them enough tools and resources so then they can grow, fully fledged, if that makes sense.
So it's really not just a name like Nike. It's really also makes sense to the service that you want to give to your client.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. When it comes to services, we offer, we are an hybrid between classic recruitment company and RPOs, classic consulting, sorry, and RPOs. We will do this hybrid, meaning that we either come on a specific advisory need. I don't know, like we for certain companies, they need to just like look at their data analysis operations. We will implement the right tools and so on, and that for that we can do that for like a week, 2 weeks, etc., and we will charge for this. It's not our primary income, frankly speaking, and we do this mostly again as a support, and so that they know we are here to help, definitely. And the primary income will be headhunting. So we are retainer executive search. We do this for how to find technical positions, and we've done that for like many different sort of like companies. It must be at an early stage indeed, but also at a bigger brands. And we also have a talent search recruitment process outsourced, and for this they will be charged per fixed fee per month, and we will do the search for them. So we'll be an extended team that they can count on.
So in a way, it's similar to what also Added Value doing in other companies. Is doing kind of extended embedded teams, right? For startups, helping them in whatever they need, right? So from ATS implementation, sourcing, recruitment, and any other things that the clients might need, or it's only limited to kind of search.
We that's what we've been doing the past couple of years. And that's very much what works at the moment. I'm saying this because we also want to offer tailor-made solutions, and especially at an early stage. I've been thinking the past 2 years what could be an ideal recruitment service that could be a product that could be sold to early stages. And actually, I don't think there is any. I think any early stages is different. So the pure headhunting, that's something that is quite clear, and we offer that to, as I said, early and not early stage companies. But when it comes to pure early stages and helping them, we are very tailor-made, and it can, like we are trying to define and design a solution that will support best our clients at an early stage, very much depending on what they need. Sometimes they need more of operations, sometimes they need more of advisory, sometimes they need more sourcing support, and we adapt that for them for sure.
And what would you say was your major challenging establishing your own company? I know it happened exactly after the COVID, so it was like a very specific time.
Yeah. So there was this idea to go back to the root cause of the problem. There was an idea to build something that wasn't that was new. That wasn't already present on the market. I think you have lots of like recruitment company operating at the later stage, but at an early stage, very few. And that's where I wanted that's what I wanted to target. Like very casually, I contacted a number of company provider or company creator in France. I established my company in France, even though we are a fully remote company. It's a French company. And it was important for me because I don't know where I'm going to be living in the next 2-3 years. But I'm definitely going to stay French. So we built the company in France, found the name, started to look for the first client. And I don't know, but I already have a couple of tips for future entrepreneurs if they launch their recruitment.
This was my one of my last questions to you. If you have tips for people who are thinking about doing something similar.
Yeah. I think I can tell you about my mistakes as well.
Yeah, I'd love to hear. Mistakes is the most interesting topic.
Definitely. I think the biggest mistake I did, or the first one, is that I wasn't narrow enough. I wasn't specific enough in what kind of services we're offering and what we are, what we want to do. That's still something we are like designing, and it's still something we are like, working on. But at the very beginning, it was a bit like, hey, look, I'm a single man Swiss knife in talent acquisition. I can help you. And a bit clients were like, okay, cool story, bro. But it's not going to help you to tell me exactly where, what you can do. And so that was the first thing, to kind of, like narrow down your services and make sure that it's quite clear and understandable by your client.
Uh-huh. Very clear also. Yeah.
Very simple. Recruitment can be difficult. Recruitment is difficult, and you need to simplify everything from your communication to your services to every, even the emails you're sending to client. Everything should be very, very simple.
Yeah. From what I know also, and I also felt during the years that also managing expectations, like if straight from the beginning, when you offer your services and you say exactly what you can do, what to expect, give a time frame for everything, because if you just make it like liquid, because it's a service, it's not a product, it's a physical product somebody can take and feel. Yeah. You need to like create a really clear borders, what it is and for how long it is and what exactly to expect. So I can understand the mistake that you're talking about.
No, 100%. And then the second one was when it comes to business development. I did a lot of outreach, and I was trying to message people and message founders and message head of talent acquisition and so on. And I think it was, I don't know, I think it was not the best idea. And I'm sorry for everyone that I chased on their WhatsApp, on their personal email, and everything, because I was quite assertive, let's say. But I think what I would advise young entrepreneurs in this space is to get one or two clients, like really treat them like queens or kings, work your ass off to make sure that their project is absolutely rocking, and then ask them to refer you.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, and you go to them and you're like, hey, look, can you give me one or two contacts that where I could sell my services? And they will do it. At the moment now, fledged number one business development source is referrals. We barely do any business development. That's something that is weak on our side. We need to change this. But referral is number one. So make sure that you get your first clients, make them successful, and then ask them for references.
This is actually a great tip, I think. I don't undervalue business development, because any growing business has to do business development and also invest in that. But definitely, I think referrals and personal connections and good reputation is something that I think maybe the best source to bring you good quality clients, because also you don't want to work with some clients. Like maybe you don't want to work with any client. Just come at your door and say, okay, I need your service. You want to also have the possibility to choose who to work with, maybe with companies that you personally believe in their product or in their vision. So I think, yeah, like personal, like the company brand and the personal connection and referrals, it's the best source. It's the same for us at Added Value, like for the last, I don't know, 10 years. I think like 95 of the clients that we are working with is coming from companies that used to work with us in the past and recommended us. So I totally, totally can relate and agree.
No, 100%. And then the very last mistake I did probably was I wanted to build a brand. I wanted to have something that goes beyond me. And I want, as you said, and you mentioned, and you understood, there is a mission behind. It's not just like, hey, look, I'm Julien, I work with me. It's more about like, hey, look, a joint mission for healthier talent acquisition operation, for more quality recruitment, for a more human talent sourcing. And that's what we are doing at Fledge. But that said, you can't hide behind a brand. You need to put yourself up there. People, they like people, and they will get your services because of you, regardless of your brand. And that's something that I'm going to do a bit more. And I guess thank you for inviting me today, because it's probably just the first step, and I'll be more and more out there and outspoken.
Definitely, definitely a good place. I think, sharing in all kind of ways, if it's written, like articles and blogs and also videos and podcasts, it's a great way to put yourself out there as a human, not just, as you said, as a brand. So I'm really happy you joined. And I really love the mission, and I want to wish you and Fledge lots of success, and hopefully also to have some future cooperations together, who knows. Yeah, I think we're coming soon to the end, because we are a bit over the time that we set. But it was really, really interesting to talk about all these topics, and it's good that we could give it a bit more time. You have some final conclusions, or somebody you want to thank, or anything you want to share with us?
Yeah, thanks for this. Absolutely. So as I mentioned already, I want to thank Melina, definitely, who's been the one who found the name. And I, and without her, there would be no even Fledge. So thank you. Nick Hines, who's been who's stronger VP of product and growth, and is always full of, is always challenging me and helping me to be better. Luke. If you say so, who's a cognitive researcher, psychology cognitive researcher in Vienna, and he's also bringing a rather profound academic point of view. Dermot and Oli, strong recruiters. Nico Rassam, definitely, who's been completely a game changer since he joined Fledge, bringing his network and his point of view on AI and software development. And of course, the team at Fledge. So we have Marie, who is looking at the social media now, and feel free to give us some I don't know, yeah, let us know what you want to see on social media at Fledge, and we'll do that, as well as Susie, who's been a game changer in talent sourcing, and she's been excellent. So I think you can't do anything alone. We've been speaking about me for like an hour now, but I think it's more a group effort, and I definitely want to thank everyone who helped since the beginning.
Amazing. Julien, thank you very much. It was really, really fun and pleasure for me to meet you and record this podcast. It's going to go live, I think, in like 1 or 2 weeks on all the podcast platforms. So I hope many people could hear and study also from your experience. And yeah, let's keep this conversation coming. Maybe another chapter about some other topic.
Thanks so much for inviting, and to everyone, I'm easily reachable. You can find me on other social, Julien Entresang, if you succeed to spell it. But you'll find me on everywhere online, so feel free to add me and drop me a note. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you. See you later. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.